Well, I hope you've had enough time to think up some questions, whatever they may concern.
However, we are peaceful. There are times when we are attracted to create bad impressions in our mind because others around us are not good and trustworthy as us. And however much you are good, you are drawn to it. If I work in an office, if I am good and others are bad, I cannot always be on that line. I have to somehow or other fall out. Can you tell us what the remedy is?
When you mean when you react to somebody else's unpleasant behavior? Yes. Well, first of all, you can remember I am the owner of my karma and not somebody else's. And you see, mindfulness acts like a brake on a car, on an automobile. If you drive a car without brakes, it's potential suicide. If you don't have a brake on a car, it's very dangerous. If we don't have mindfulness, it's potential emotional suicide. And when you drive a car and you see a dangerous curve ahead, you step on the brake. That gives you time. You slow down. Gives you time to turn your steering wheel away from the danger and in a different direction, right? And you can be safe. If you use mindfulness on yourself, when a dangerous situation arises, you step on that brake of mindfulness and you realize that it has now come to a situation where you have to change your direction. You don't just blindly follow through with the instinct and impulse that has arisen. You can keep that picture of the car that was going to go over the side in a dangerous curve in your mind, because the emotions are going to go over the side. You're going to tumble down on your emotions and fall down, and it's going to be hurtful. So the brake that you put on your emotions is the mindfulness. It gives you time. You slow down. You turn the wheel. You change. You hear what these people or what that person is saying. It may be something wrong, maybe unpleasant even action. And instead of anger, instead of rejection, you arouse in yourself compassion for that person's karma that they're making, for their ignorance of knowing that they don't know that they're doing something bad maybe. The compassion which you arouse will take away any anger, any resistance, anything bad. But you need the mindfulness to slow you down from the instinctive, impulsive reaction to a deliberate one.
I would like to ask a question about how you look at death when you die. I was at a meeting and met a priest of the Swedish church, and he told me that everyone he has seen dying and near dying was full of anxious, anxious and was afraid of dying. And that's something everyone has nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him that my feeling is that, for instance, Buddhists are not looking at this moment in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
What's your impression? Can you get rid of this fear of dying?
Yes. You can get rid of it, but you should do it while you're still alive and well, and not on your deathbed. The Buddha gave us five daily recollections, which every person should daily remember. And they go like this. I'm of the nature to decay. I have not got beyond decay. I'm of the nature to be diseased. I have not got beyond disease. I'm of the nature to die. I have not got beyond death. Now, these are the first three, and because they concern what you asked, I won't say the others. Now, if we put our mind on that we are very perishable, we're very perishable goods, And we will not last. It is absolutely sure. That also helps us to live each day meaningfully. To live each day as if it was our last one, not as if it was our first one. And if we live each day like that, we make a lot of good impressions on our mind. We do good deeds. We do good things automatically. Because we're not waiting for the future. We know this may be my last day. It is possible. We are aware of the fact that death is guaranteed. We can all have a written guarantee that we're going to die. But we cannot have a written guarantee that we're going to live. That we cannot. So when we remember this every day, we do good deeds. And we have, if we use mindfulness on our emotions, and this is something I will talk about this afternoon, the kind of emotions which will bring happiness and peace to ourselves and others, that thing makes so much habit forming in us that at the time of death, we are contented. We know we have spent our time in the best possible way and we are ready to go. Because we've been ready to go before. Every single day of remembering I am of the nature to die makes it possible for us to accept our own death. And then, of course, through meditation, we actually have a vision of that, an inner vision, not an outer picture, but an inner vision that death is something that we are approaching. And in that approach, we do the best we can with every moment. At the time when it comes, it's a natural outcome of life. But not every Buddhist does it. Those who practice. Peaceful way. Of course. It is never to be understood that any particular religion has a monopoly on any of the thoughts and practices which are for the furtherance of one's spiritual growth. The only thing that we can think about is to do it, to practice, whether it is, has a name or this name or that name. I can add to that maybe that the Buddha did not teach Buddhism. He taught the Dhamma. And the Dhamma is the law of nature, the truth. And he was a reformer. He tried to reform what in those days was called the Brahminical religion, which was full and still is full of superstitious beliefs that there will be others who will do something for one. And in that respect, he has exactly tried to fulfill exactly the same function as Jesus. He tried to reform the Jewish religion, tried to chase the money changers out of the temple. In other words, the Jewish religion was in a mess. And he tried to reform it. He did not teach Christianity. He taught a spiritual path. It's the same with the Buddha. He did not teach Buddhism. All these ideas and words and constructions are later additions by the organizations which follow the master. And when they become organized, they become also, in a way, they become fossilized. There's a structure around them, and we don't see, very often we don't see the forest for the trees. But I'm sure that there are many people who can die consciously and quite happily, because of the fact that they have used their life already to accept that fact and to live accordingly. Now, there are many ways one can help a dying person to do that. And it is much more common nowadays than it's ever been before to help dying people to die satisfactorily. Yes?
I would like to ask one more question.
Certainly. No. What gave you that idea? Yes, something very definite happens. Rebirth happens, unfortunately. You've got to go through the whole mess again. Yes. You see, if one practices, really practices, and that means that you get aware of what goes on within and you become aware of what goes on without, there comes a time when this kind of existence is no longer satisfactory or satisfying. And then one says, yes, one has to be reborn, unfortunately. The rebirth which occurs, according to the Buddha's teaching, is not that you or I, in the form we are looking now, or with the name that we have now, are reborn. Nothing of the sort. But the karma we have made, the good or bad actions, those resultants, they are, because the mind that carries that karma still has a craving for existence, that comes forward like a red herring, and that reappears. It's totally impersonal. The Buddha said like that, the one who's made the karma and the one who reaps the resultants is neither the same nor a different one. The answer lies in the middle. In other words, it's not a personal rebirth, it's an impersonal one. But it keeps on going over and over and over until one finally makes an end to it by having seen absolute reality and absolute truth. But that takes a little while. And it is not the idea of coming to an everlasting heaven at all. Not at all. That's an eternity belief which the Buddha denied. There is no eternity belief in Buddhism. Yes. Anatta.
Anatma.
That's Sanskrit. Anatta in Pali. Yes.
After.
Yes.
So now when we discuss rebirth,
yes,
we say something that this world goes on from birth to birth. So can that be the soul, or how are we going to explain it?
That business about soul. You can equate the idea of soul. It's just an idea, because, I mean, it's just a word, no? I mean, nobody's seen it, and nobody's touched it, and nobody knows anything about it, because people have the idea that the soul is the nice part of them. But what do they do with the not-so-nice part? Forget it, throw it away, get rid of it somehow or other. I mean, the soul is supposed to be that good part of them. But you can equate that idea with the karma. The karma is that which remains and realizes its existence through craving, through the craving that exists in the mind. And it's not personal. It's impersonal. So there is no atta in it, there's no I in it. Because if there were, how come you don't know anything about it, what happened last time? Not a thing, huh? All gone. There's nobody there. Nobody there to know it. And even if you did, it would never be that which was you. Can't remember anything about it that it was you. Would have been somebody else. But it's a totally theoretical and it's a theoretical discussion in a way which can help one in one way to realize the futility of it. But that's about it. It can show then one that it's futile to try to live on that worldly level where this happens all the time. That's about its only value. Otherwise it's our constant topic, karma and rebirth. Favorite topic.
Thank you very much, sister.